This is Press Play's Summer Mixtape. I'm Madeline Brand. All this week, we're featuring artist interviews and custom DJ sets in place of our normal programming. Well, today, a special treat. We're talking to singer-songwriter Jackson Brown. His debut record came out in 1972. Since then, he has released more than a dozen albums. He's been inducted into both the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. His laid-back folk sound and deeply personal lyrics really tell a half-century-long story about life, love, and heartbreak with a distinctly Southern California sound. Jackson Brown grew up here in Los Angeles. He attended high school in Fullerton. In fact, he was in high school when he wrote a song that would go on to really define his storytelling style. And I had a lover, but it's so hard to risk another. That's These Days off Jackson Brown's second album, For Every Man. Well, Brown just released his 15th studio album this month. It's called Downhill From Everywhere. And Jackson Brown joins me now. Welcome.
Hi, Madeline. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. And before we get to the new album, let's talk about that song, These Days, first made famous by Nico from the Velvet Underground, and also recorded by other people, lots of other people, including Greg Allman, including Drake. So obviously the song speaks to people across the generations. But you wrote it when you were, what, 15, 16 years old?
16, I think, yeah, about 16. Yeah, a lot of people recorded it before I did. Greg Allman recorded it before I did.
So, yeah. Why is that? Why did you have other people record it before you did?
Well, it wasn't that I had them. Well, I didn't have a record deal when Nico... she'd hired me as her accompanist, so she learned some of my songs, and she had, in her first record, she was doing songs by Lou Reed and Tim Hardin. There was a Bob Dylan song that no one had ever heard called I'll Keep It With Mine. So she was curating songwriters then, and much in the same way that people like Judy Collins was, although nobody but me would compare her to Judy Collins, but in that she was gathering up songs. But you know, her second album was full of her own compositions, and in my opinion, it's the real start of her creative life, because she didn't really like what happened to These Days or any of the songs on that record, because Columbia, Tom Wilson, the producer, just sort of put a bunch of string arrangements on it. It was a sort of solution to what to do with somebody who was singing a bunch of different songs, and they didn't put a lot of time into it.
I've been out walking. I don't do too much talking these days. These days. These days I seem to think a lot about the things that I forgot to do.
It's more enduring than her other work, actually, in that, there's the sound of her voice. A lot of people, some people, when they do it, they sort of emulate her version. Glenn Campbell did, actually. When he recorded,
really?
I thought, oh, he's doing the Nico version, which is... you can hear it. Somebody brought him this song and said, check this out, do this. And I'm sure he'd probably never heard my version. And my version, I was emulating Greg Allman, because I'd written the song and I sang it a certain way. Greg Allman slowed it down and played it real slow. And that's when the clip that you played was really me trying to play it more like Greg Allman. But of course, I can't sing like him. I don't have his voice or... But that's the way he heard it. That's the way he remembered it, because he heard that song before anybody else had heard it. I mean, he knew that song from hanging out in L.A. when they were not even the Allman Brothers yet. They were called the Hourglass then. A lot of the same players.
How did he hear the song? From you?
Yeah. I sang it to them. But we were when I met them when they were playing living in Southern California for a while.
So was this a moment where you were all sharing songs with each other and playing for each other and kind of, I don't know.
They were being managed by a guy that managed the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and I had been in the Dirt Band, and Jeff Hanna from the Dirt Band turned me onto them, said, you got to check these guys out that Bill McEwen's managing now. And I thought they were incredible. Matter of fact, they were playing around Southern California, and they, Dwayne and Greg, invited me to a rehearsal of Frank Zappa Band because they had done a show together with Frank Zappa somewhere out in Riverside or Azusa or something, and he befriended them and invited them to come to a rehearsal of his that he was doing in a theater in Hollywood, and we were, you know, and it was great. They're rehearsing on stage and rehearsing some physical, you know, parts of the music too, but it was really great to hear them go from, you know, Petrushka to the Bristol Stomp, you know, and rehearsing it, you know, they were very powerful, you know, young players, and Zappa recognized that and invited them to, you know, to come hang and watch what he was doing.
How old were you then?
I was probably about 19, 20, maybe. He remembered it from my singing it, but he didn't say anything about it at the time. And when I ran into him later, after the Allman Brothers were huge, you know, he said he was going to put it on his solo project, which was done after was in the Allman Brothers. So, yeah, he just did it. I mean, one of the odd factoids of all this whole thing is, like, if a song has been recorded, anybody can record it as long as they pay.
Yeah.
You don't have to get permission or anything. So that song by that time had been recorded by Nico.
Why do you think that song is so popular through the decades? Mm-hmm. So what is it about this particular, the arrangement or the lyrics?
I think it's Nico. I think it's that you know, because she sounded so disaffected. She was so arctic and remote, you know, and she had a German accent, and she sang beautifully, and her voice was rather low for a woman. But she was just had a persona that really comes out in that. As a matter of fact, the way she pronounced the words were very much a product of how I sang in that at that time. Not that I sang like Nico, I mean, but I, you know, I've been out walking, you know, I was trying to teach her how to, the notes, and I kind of exaggerated the syllables, and that's the way she learned it. So why it's lasted, I don't know. I think it has something to do with, people say, have always remarked that it's rather old song or a song that would be written by an older person, but it's not that. I think it's that it's a very young song. That's what I think. Huh. I think it's about the sorrow that you feel encountering your own fallibility, or the, you know, you're beginning to see that you make mistakes, and some of them are long lasting, you know. So that's something that happens around the time you're mid teens, maybe, you know.
I don't know. Well, I mean, my 16-year-old loves that song. It's just one of his favorites. So I see what you mean.
There's that moment in the song where you say, "Don't confront me with my failures. I hadn't forgotten them." Right. There was a guy that I met. He was the date of this younger girl that he was dating. This girl came to the concert, came backstage, and he was an English guy, and he didn't know any of my music. But he said, "Oh, I really like that one song. It really kind of caught me by surprise, you know. And I can't remember the name of it, but it's got that, you know, I know I'm screwing things up, and I know it." That's how he paraphrased the song.
Well, you know, I don't think we give teenagers that much credit for understanding these feelings.
That's,
you know,
right.
We think, oh, they're just talking about crushes, and
that's right.
And they don't understand love or deep issues or feelings of loss because they're so young. Like, how could they, right? But here,
right.
You know, here it is. You as a 16-year-old, you're writing all about that. So that refutes that whole idea. They are deep thinkers at 16.
I think you feel things really deeply.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's the difference. Do you still feel that way? I mean, now you're what?
No.
In your 70s? early 70s. You're a young 70 some odd person.
Yeah, yeah. Here's the way that works: is that when a song, it contains that feeling or that emotion. There's times when I sing it when I'm really emotionally experiencing that song. And what happens is that you experience it from with a different history. By the time you're older, you've got a whole life full of experiences that may really reinforce that feeling or add to it. So some songs get amplified by just the passing of time. Not, mm-hmm. for me, but also for the listeners, So yeah, it's not that they're not diminished by the passing of time if you're doing it right. And there are other things about it. Like, for instance, if a song that really meant something to you at a certain time in your life, it'll carry a charge. You really have contributed to the meaning of that song so much by the life you led while you were listening to it. And that stays with you. That's what you carry with you. It's that song. I remember feeling that way only when I was still young. I mean, I remember hearing a Dylan song that I hadn't heard in several years, but it was a song I loved when it came out, and I listened to for an entire summer, say. You know, I just listened to it with my friends, and it was on a record. Like, it was, say, it was on, Another Side of Bob Dylan. And it was just, and so when I heard it a few years later, it came flooding back with all kinds of memories that were, they're not that old, 3 or 4 years old, but then it was like, a huge chunk of my life ago.
Do you remember which song that was?
I don't know the titles anymore. The gypsy girl, the streets of Harlem, I'm not committing. I got to know. I don't know it well enough. I once tried to make a mixtape for a younger friend of mine, and I thought I'd be putting my most fondly remembered songs on it. But what happened is I played the records to find these songs, and suddenly I was hearing the sort of secondary songs, the songs that you heard just as many times because it was on an album you were playing. And it was just as big a part of me. So, it works in a funny way, what your mind remembers and what takes up residence in your mind.
Was it Spanish Harlem Incident? Was that the song?
That would be the name of that title, Yeah. But that song, the songs that I get the titles confused on that album, like, I agreed to sing Love Minus Zero over No Limit for an amnesty project where everybody was doing Dylan songs. And it turned out that it was not the title of the song they had. I remembered it as that was the title. But she's got everything she needs. She's an artist. What's that?
She Belongs to Me.
She Belongs to Me, yeah.
She never stumbles. She's got no place to fall. She never stumbles. She got no place to fall. She's nobody's child. The law can't touch her at all.
That's She Belongs to Me, right? And Love Minus Zero really like, my love, she speaks like silence.
My love, she speaks like silence. Without ideals of violence. She doesn't have to say she's faithful. Yet she's true like ice, like fire.
That's Love Minus Zero. So I agreed to do Love Minus Zero thinking I was going to get to sing. She's got everything. No, it's just me getting my sacred texts confused.
Let's talk about the new album a little bit. And I want to talk about one song in particular called Human Touch. We're going to hear a little bit of it, but if you could just set it up, tell me what this one's about.
This was a song written for a movie, and it was written with two other people, with Leslie Mendelson and Steve McEwen, and they needed the end credits for a movie about the beginnings of the AIDS epidemic and the first ward that was dedicated to treating AIDS patients and where they, before they even know how it was contracted. And it brought in all kinds of fears and homophobia into the decisions of the hospital and not the hospital was very courageous about it, but the city government and so on. And so it's a really interesting film, and it's really about understanding not only what these patients went through as they were dying from a mysterious disease, but the doctors themselves not knowing if they might be in danger of passing it on to their own families, and just the fear, just all the fears. So the film is really about overcoming those fears, and the doctors were so, and nurses in particular were so courageous in treating them with humanity and with compassion, and taking off the hazmat suits and just simply giving them solace and comfort as they died. So I actually thought when I was offered to write a song for, I didn't think I'd be able to do it. But when I heard what they had started, what Steve and Leslie had started, I thought, oh, this is a great song. It sort of dispelled my fears of not being able to. I mean, I've turned down so many offers to write for films because I'm just afraid that I won't get it. You know, it won't be good enough.
Okay, well, let's hear a little bit from Human Touch.
Everybody gets lonely, feel like it's all too much. Reaching out for some connection, or maybe it's just their own reflection. Not everybody finds it. Not like the two of us. Sometimes all anybody needs is a human touch.
So you say this is about the AIDS crisis, but I couldn't help but think it's also about the current health crisis we're living through, COVID.
Yeah, it has resonances in the present situation. It's sort of that, you know. The fact that we've always had difficulty with epidemic, pandemic, any kind of a, you know, where our health situation is precarious always. So, yeah, it brings a lot of that stuff out of the song. And the real thing at play in the song is our compassion for one another and the ability to recognize each other's humanity when, mm-hmm. you know, when in a crisis.
Do you think, I mean, you have spent a career writing really personal songs, but also being politically active and writing songs that speak to that part, the sort of the public part, the political part. Where do you think we are when you're talking about this compassion? Where do you think we are publicly with that now?
We're at a crossroads here. I mean, like, I'm about to embark on a tour, and all the places we're playing have varying rules about, you know, COVID protocol. And I have to do, in some places, you know, it's, they've challenged the constitutionality of telling people that they have to wear a mask if they enter their store. And that's really kind of, that's really an astonishing place to get out where we don't agree about that, about public health, about science.
So how do you, when you go into these places and you're going on tour and some of these places who, as you say, they have different political values than your own. How do you talk to them from the stage, or how do you address that in your music? Do you address it, or do you kind of avoid it and just put on a good show?
Well, here's how I deal with it. I assume that people share my values. I do understand that not everybody does, but that's not really the focus. I think that my job is to, as a writer, you know, is to persuade. So I want my songs to be persuasive and not exult in some sort of point of view that is understood or given. Like, and it sort of played out a long time ago with my song Lives in the Balance, which was about U.S. involvement in Central America. And I thought I had to explain, because I knew that not everybody knew what we were doing there. So I thought I had to explain things. And that turned out to be a problem, you know, because then people really feel like they're being lectured. And you are. You're trying to tell them something in so many words. And I found that the song works best that way. We just let the song do its work. Just sing the song. If the song's good, the song will do its job, you know, of introducing a subject or going into, you know, getting to the heart of the matter.
I'm wondering, because your songs are so personal and tell the story, or some story, some part of your life, not your entire life. But I'm wondering if you write the songs for yourself to chronicle your life, like almost like a diary in a way. that other people can also hear their own stories in. But the mm-hmm. but that for you, it's your own life story, yeah. but lived in public in a way.
Mm-hmm. That's the way I think about it too. The songs are for me, and you know, I hope that they mean something to others. But yeah, and it is kind of a record of where I've been, what I've gone through.
So I guess the question is, why? How does it change when you make it public? Like, you could just write a diary for yourself, but then it takes on a different sense of who you are when you perform it or when you record it. And then, do you see yourself differently when you listen to those recordings?
Well, I try to ignore the questions about how much of this is. I mean, I've always thought this is really not a matter of me recounting the events of my life. The song has to be about the listener. So it's about singing something in a, with details and from a life, you know, but it's interesting that those details are somewhat universal in a lot of cases, sometimes not. But I mean, mm-hmm. That's an aspect of short story writing too. They want the details. They want the odd sort of, seeable differences of a life, you know. It makes it difficult to write a song about a relationship you're in because you feel like you're making some sort of announcement, or you're like you're making a report, you know. So you gotta. Mm-hmm. There are times when I stop writing about my personal life altogether and start just writing about social issues. I didn't do it intentionally. Yeah. I just sort of shied away from, you know. For instance, I wrote a song called In the Shape of a Heart, and it was many, many years after. It was about the death of my first wife. I mean, it involved mm-hmm. that. And, you know, I thought as I was doing it, I said, wow, this is about something that happened so long ago. But I think it took me that long to be able to sing about it or write something about it or know what to say. And that's sometimes what's going on if I sing a song, a very personal song from about something in the past. I did it so much that I thought each time I'd start a song like that, I'd say, boy, you better have a good reason to be going back here. This is like, you know. And somebody pointed out to me now, actually, what a journalist pointed out to me with this record, that all these songs are in the present tense. And I didn't realize that. I wasn't trying to do that, but I think I like it.
Well, thanks for being here in the present tense on the show today. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Madeline. Thanks for having me on and for your good questions.
Well, it's my pleasure. That's Jackson Brown. His new album is called Downhill From Everywhere. It's out now.
Out into the cool of the evening strolls the pretender. He knows that all his hopes and dreams begin and end there.
Coming up, KCRW DJ and curator of Eclectic 24, Chris Derritas, takes over Press Play's summer mixtape, and his Jackson Brown inspired set is next on Press Play.
Leaving nothing, living nothing but to choose off. A girl who can show me what laughter means, and we'll fill in the missing colors in each other's paint-by-number dreams. And then we'll put our dark glasses on, and we'll make love until our strength is gone. And when the morning light comes streaming in, we'll get up and do it again. Get it up again. I'm gonna be a happy idiot and struggle for the legal tender.
Hey. Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
I'm Chris Doritas, pleased to be with you, bringing you Press Play's summer mixtape on KCRW.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all.
Second, I'm done. Exhaling every breath that I get in my lung. And you can take it like a rhythm and a rhythm and adrenaline disseminating lingo. Then I'm bringing in a synonym. And many men and women to the bend to do the minimum. I get them on my pin and then I'm winning and I'm winning again. Andy Cooper coming out of the blue like a boy named Sue saying, how do you do? I got a beat that's like bare feet on concrete. Hot! Burning out of Long Beach all the way to Zaire. I don't want to lie here. When I get an idea, put it into high gear and ramble on. I'm on a beaker roll, but I'm a bag of moment. I get on to do another show. No quitting me. Never had enough. Float with a beat like an aqueduct. So quickly, let my rapper run. No diggity. I got to bag it up. I'm a time bomb, taking the blood with the get up and go to the little middle man to bring the rig of my roll. I'm a rhyme on the set, going live in the wreck with a vibe in the fix. And a dive on the deck when I, when I, when I, when I. Ready to roll, you wanna get the party going, anybody let me know. Cause I'm a bad man with a hammer and the mic. You think I'ma see me brother to the end of the night. You wanna rock, rock, out of control. With everybody going at it when I'm putting on the show. I've been waiting on the side for my moment to arrive. Never rockin' with my people and you know we gonna fly. ought to be given if you want a disc, cause I audibly gotta be on the front of any list when I hit him like, thumb on my jab, and I'm dazed by the phrase that I wrote on my pad, coming with a right, knock you out, I'll keep bringing the pain to the end of the bout, my lips are the lighter, igniting the wick that I lit when I spit all the fire, and there can never be another imitating me when I kick an analytical and hit it, baby D. I'm light skinned and enigmatic, and I never get erratic, and I love a second to the cinematic when I'm at it, I can take a bit of predicate to whip it into shape and integrate a group on a ventilator. At any rate, I got him on the ropes in a day, stoked in a maze that I broke from the cage, talking really fast, see your hands pulled back like a rockabilly cat. Take cover, shoot from the hips, make a wave like a lunar eclipse, I'm attacked to your black and your blue, Mr. Crisp, doing top 10 for goof in the mix. I come through with a head of steam, designing the rhyming scheme, Mr. Bravado, aficionado, grip on the mic that I rip like a throttle. Fast on the rap, ass on and on, fast like driving on an Autobahn. Fast all day like Ramadan, I'm holding the button, I'm becoming a phenomenon. Cause I damn like nobody can, I'm the man with the plan like Cobra Command or Tony Montana. Go my banana, scope on the land on the boat from a man. I'm man, I'm bad to the bone, standing alone, coming with the number one, handmade of foam in the zone. In the zone, I'ma cool my favorite song, Benita, I'm a bomb, you gotta put me on. Benita, 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 Ina, gotta DeVita, if you're not a believer, then meet a meet a meet a. And I couldn't be timid, I live in the minute, you better run it quick in the minute, I'm living it over the limit when I try. Ready to roll, you wanna get the party going, anybody let me know, cause I'm a bad man when they hand me the mic, you need to come and see me rip it till the end of the night. I'm gonna rock, out of control, everybody going at it when I'm putting on the show. I've been waiting on the side for my moment to provide, I'm a rocker with my people and you know we gonna fly.
Listening to French pianist and composer Florian Pellissier and his quintet. This is from the album Bijou Voyou Caillou. The track Love at First Sight in Thessalonica. Just ahead of this, we heard from the Bristol, UK band The Allergies. The track is called Rock Rock, featuring rapid fire vocals from Andy Cooper. You can find this on Jalapeno Records. The Allergies, Rock Rock. Top of the set, Dr. My Eyes, from the 1972 self-titled debut album from Jackson Browne. Guitar work from Jesse Ed Davis and backup vocals from David Crosby and Graham Nash. I'm Chris DeRitas. You're with Press Play's Summer Mixtape on KCRW. We continue. Stay close. Chris DeRitas, it's Press Play's Summer Mixtape on KCRW.
What makes you think?
When I never tell, stay busy so I don't think, cause downtime is when it's sinking. I stared old pictures. I thought you wanted to dance. I thought you wanted to dance. I
Close.
sky pirinia, pas de soleil.
Sky pirinia, pas de soleil.
Un fait d'hiver,
de pullover.
Trois, c'est l'ivresse.
Quatrième vers,
ça caille pignia, pas de soleil. Ça caille pignia, pas de soleil.
This is Press Play's Summer Mixtape on KCRW.
Me. I don't know what really happens at the end of the road. got ceilings, but I burn in the sun. I never miss one shot. I'm sick as a gun. I got mortal friends. I'm dead as they come. Like, hey, I'm on the way. I left my body in the mattress by the San Francisco Bay. No, there's a cop named Mordecai behind my pirate in Mercedes. When we crash, I hit the ER. This is a thriller. I did it for the PR. I did it for the VR. I did it knowing there's a dead animal back in the back of the fridge. I go back it up. My triple attack and battery as in my stacks in the cabin. As you recrack it, my doggies run back. I just sell them to bag it up, bag it up, bag it up.
I don't know what really, really happens at the end of the road. I don't know what really, really happens at the end of the road. I don't know what really, really happens at the end of the road.
This is Press Play's Summer Mixtape on KCRW. Listening to Michigan native, saxophonist, DJ, producer, Grant Kaczynski, better known as Grizz. He's got a brand new album. It's called Rainbow Brain. And this track is called Harmony. It's Grizz. Ahead of this, New York artist 2 Feet with the track called Devil. Just before 2 Feet, that was Noga Erez with End of the Road. She is an Israeli singer-songwriter with a brand new album. It's pretty spectacular. It's called Kids. Jujoa and Lieutenant Nicholson, that is a French Afropean duo. Way back in the set, Montreal singer Shay Leah, in collaboration with a Nigerian singer, Adekunle Gold, and the track is called Irrational. Very top of the set, we heard brand new work from Tyler the Creator and his album, Call Me If You Get Lost. We heard I Thought You Wanted to Dance. Tyler the Creator to start off that set. I'm Chris DeRitas. It's been my absolute pleasure to be here for Press Play's Summer Mixtape. Have a wonderful day.
And thanks to KCRW DJ and curator of Eclectic 24, Chris DeRitas, for that set. I'm Ellen Brand. I'll see you tomorrow as we continue Press Play's Summer Mixtape with my interview with Grammy Award-winning singer, Lettucey.